The Athletic.
Straight Out of Cobham, the Chelsea FC podcast from The Athletic. On this episode, international blues, Romelu Lukaku's Belgian century, academy update and WSL disappointment. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Out of Cobham. Again, listener, it's me, Matt Davis Adams, here with you today, joined by two of The Athletic's Chelsea experts. Simon Johnson is here.
Hello.
And so too Dominic Byfield.
Good morning, Matt.
All right, let's get to some Chelsea-related talking points from the international break thus far. One thing that occurred to me watching England versus Andorra yesterday, Reece James playing in central midfield in the second half of that game. Dom, admittedly, any of the three of us could probably have done the same in that particular match, but might have made Thomas Tuchel have a little think. He's brought Saul in now, so I guess it's quite unlikely. But if he didn't know, he knows now that Reece is capable of doing that.
Yeah, I'm sure he probably did know that, you know, at a push, that's a position that he could fill in on. It was a strange one with England because I suppose the focus was largely drawn towards Trent Alexander-Arnold in terms of the, you know, getting the third right back into the starting 11, Kieran Trippier having played at left back during the Euros. And Alexander-Arnold looked distinctly uncomfortable in midfield through that first half on the right of the three, and actually looked far better in the second half, again operating at right back. And Reece got forward and he hit the bar. So I think his versatility will count in his favour, certainly at international level. And I think that was one of the reasons he got into the squad in the summer as well. So no qualms about that. But whether Tuchel could use it, I guess, but he has got options there. As we're writing about this week, the powers of Chelsea's midfield, which have just been bolstered during the recent transfer window as well. So I think it would be quite a last resort, but one that potentially could explore, go back to those Wigan days when I think he operated there for an entire season.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, it's well worth searching. Reece James goal v Bristol City when he was playing in central midfield for Wigan. Absolute beauty from about 40 yards. Joel's tweeted us to ask whether Lukaku should be on pens for Chelsea now, Simon. This is after Jorginho missed one on Sunday for Italy in their goalless draw against Switzerland. A few people have mentioned this. I can never make my mind up whether Jorginho is a brilliant penalty taker or actually, if you examine his record, it's not that good. I'm sure Lukaku's thinking about it.
And also, it's a great way of getting cheap goals for an expensive striker. That's why I sort of queried it with Timo Werner, particularly in the early months when you just sort of think last season where there was a glorious opportunity for him to sort of start racking up some goals and just take some of the pressure off. Jorginho has missed a few, and that's the problem with his technique because he hits it so slowly. If the keeper does go the right way, he's in a bit of trouble. And of course he missed a rather big, what could have been a very big one in the Euro 2020 final that would have turned him from hero to zero, many Italian and also of course Chelsea fans sort of see him as this sort of Ballon d'Or contender. He is a good penalty taker, but he wouldn't be first on my list. Yeah, give it to Lukaku, get him that golden boot that he so wants.
Speaking of Werner, he scored for Germany in both their wins against Liechtenstein and Armenia, so a few people have been in touch to ask whether that means that he'll play his way into the team against Villa. Has been a surprise, Dom, that we've seen so little of him. Do you think Thomas Tuchel takes into account what happens in these international matches when he's thinking about his team for the weekend?
I think it's probably more about fitness at this stage of the season and regular game time. I was talking to sports scientists at the start of last season. Slightly exceptional circumstances given the condensed nature of that campaign, but they were saying that in these first two international breaks, teams generally want to see their players playing for the international teams, getting minutes under the belt, getting some rhythm into their game. And the fact that Werner has featured in both those matches will count in his favour, definitely. And you know, he's Armenia is hardly a world-beating opposition, and Aston Villa is considerably stronger, I'd imagine, this weekend. But it's not going to hurt him to have scored a goal and to set up another. I'm quite intrigued to see how Werner and Lukaku combine when they are given their chance, and I'm sure they will be. I think we know that Werner in the past has thrived when he's had another striker up there alongside him, a bigger man maybe, and he can run off him. So hopefully that will work in his favour in the weeks and months ahead. And the very fact that Kai Havertz was unavailable for that game through flu, I think he's got at the moment, I suppose bolsters the chances of Werner getting game time at the weekend.
Yeah, one would think so. Yeah, Havertz, as Dom mentioned, didn't play for Germany. We'll probably get an update when he gets back to Cobham as to whether he's available for Saturday. Yaren pointing out Chelsea got pretty lucky that Hakim Ziyech and Thiago Silva didn't get called up for their countries over the international break. Listener, you probably heard about Brazil's game with Argentina being abandoned after 5 minutes after the four English-based Argentina players were marched off the pitch accused of COVID quarantine violations. You might not know that Morocco's players were evacuated from Guinea, where they were supposed to be playing, after a military coup in the country. All of a sudden, the England ban don't seem quite as bad. A nod to Armando Broja, who came off the bench to hit a late winner for Albania against Hungary. We'll roll that into a question from Brian, who says, with Hudson-Odoi not leaving on loan and re-suspended for the next three matches, is there any chance the former will get a few starts? Well, Broja and Hudson-Odoi, two of the academy products, and that allows me to segue nicely into Simon's excellent piece on the state of the Chelsea Academy and Thomas Tuchel's relationship therewith. It's an interesting one, Simon, because it's kind of almost halfway between a Maurizio Sarri and a Frank Lampard approach, if that's the right way of looking at it.
Yeah, I think no one can be under any illusions that Thomas Tuchel isn't Frank Lampard, or Jody Morris or Joe Edwards, that trio. But also, Chelsea aren't in the same position as they were under those three with the transfer ban, etc. So bringing in youth players was a great way of offsetting the fact that Chelsea couldn't buy anybody. What I've tried to explain in the piece is that, yeah, of course there's cause for concern, because with Chelsea getting rid of all these youngsters, a lot of youngsters themselves choosing to want to leave, suddenly you are sort of thinking, well, you know, what is going on? But as the former loan technical coach Eddie Newton explained in the piece, it is a business. You know, like Chelsea perhaps, you know, they get criticised a lot for how much they spend, etc. But in the last decade in particular, they have been paying far more respect to FFP and trying to make ends meet a lot more. I know people point to last year where they spent over a club record 200 million, but that was funded by sales of Hazard and Morata. And it's just this year, it's now being funded by lots of youth players. Ideally, they'd sell Bakayoko, Drinkwater, Ross Barkley for a lot of money, but clubs don't have much money. And certainly, it's not just the transfer fee that Chelsea would ask for, it's the wages. So what do you do? What's the next best scenario? Well, you look at their brilliant academy. It's kind of, as I say in the piece, they're a victim of their own success as well. You know, if you've got one of the best academies, you're going to have a lot of clubs sniffing around your players going, oh, you're never going to play for Chelsea. Come play for us. You can play at 18 like Tino Livramento is doing. Look at Jamal Musiala in Bayern Munich and so on and so forth. So it's a very nuanced piece. Yes, the orders from above, as Eddie sort of says, Roman Abramovich's dream is for all these youngsters to be in the first team. But Chelsea also expect to win silverware every season. It's a really delicate balancing act. And Thomas Tuchel has now got that challenge to try and encourage players like Chalobah to come through. But at the same time, he knows if he doesn't win on a Saturday, his job's quickly on the line.
But Tuchel can point, Dom, to the Champions League final, can't he? And say, well, Andreas Christensen played the bulk of that game and Reece James and Mason Mount were pivotal to Chelsea's victory in it. So there aren't many other European champions who would have three academy players in such prominent positions. So even if people are starting to leave or people are getting stuck in the loan cycle, there are still those sort of totemic figures for young players coming through to look at and see that it is still possible, even if Frank Lampard's not the coach anymore.
Absolutely, and we shouldn't forget that for a very, very long period under Abramovich's ownership, John Terry was the only academy player, ex-academy player, you know, playing regularly in the first team. He was always held up, and there was this frustration there for ages and ages and ages that for all the money being ploughed into the academy, it wasn't producing regular first team players at Chelsea. Well, it is now, and the problem, I guess, for the next wave is not only do they have to displace all the big money signings, but they also have to displace, you know, three academy graduates turned internationals in Mount, Christensen and James. So there are even more people ahead of them in the pecking order. I thought the piece was really, really interesting, and I thought the quote from Chelsea Youth, where he explained that the pandemic has almost changed the ideology or the way that these kids are approaching their football careers, and they look at it now and they realise that they don't have as much time as maybe they thought they did. I mean, anything can happen in football. We've just gone through a pandemic which has cost 18 months of normality. So if an opportunity comes to go and play first team football in the Premier League at a club like, say, Southampton, then they take it now. Whereas maybe in the past they might have been inclined to stick about a bit longer and wait for their chance at Chelsea or earn a good wage at Chelsea and go out on loan. No, they want a bit of solidity and surety in their life to a certain extent. And that's what Southampton offered Livramento, a sort of a route into the first team. The other thing that's maybe slightly pandemic related as well that has probably hurt Chelsea's in terms of retaining this talent is a lot of clubs out there, a lot of middle of the road Premier League clubs that would normally have been happy to pick up the cast offs, the Barclays, the Bakayokos. I look at Spurs, at the Sissokos, etc. And Sissoko is a player in point. I know he was offered to two or three Premier League clubs that would normally be perfect takers for him, would have been happy to pay his wage because they know they're getting a seasoned international who would come in and do a job for them. But their philosophy had changed overnight. They didn't want a 30-something experienced player. They actually wanted the next generation. They wanted somebody in their early 20s who's going to be the future that they can build something around and has a sell-on value potentially. So it's almost changed the philosophy. I know Sissoko went to Watford, but I think the newly promoted clubs are slightly different again. And it's like a perfect storm, which has seen a lot of academy players at Chelsea leave in one summer, something that maybe we wouldn't have envisaged a couple of years back, even a year back. And now we're seeing them dispersed around the top flight and indeed around the world.
The one point I sort of just want to add on that is that, you know, Chelsea fans also have got to decide sort of what they want. You know, do you want sort of to wait and sort of wait for more youngsters to come through and get frustrated when the odd result goes against you? A bit like what happened during the Lampard era. You know, it was an entertaining 18 months, but it didn't bring any trophies. Or do you want the sort of the manager that's obviously going to be a bit more ruthless? You can only have to look at the sort of the treatment that Thomas Tuchel's handed out to Hudson-Odoi, for example. But you're winning every week. You're winning a Champions League trophy. Also, you look at it and go, these youth players have effectively funded Romelu Lukaku. And if you were to sort of say Lukaku v Tammy Abraham, who would you rather have leading the line? Tammy Abraham is still a player that's working on his game. Lukaku's the finished article. That's why everyone's talking about Chelsea being title contenders now. So it is one that Chelsea supporters themselves also have to sort of think, well, what do they really want from this team? Do they want to go for the youth players, which is perfectly fine, but accept the consequences, or accept the fact that Chelsea are going to sort of buy more of the finished article and perhaps compete for major silverware on a regular basis? Where I have issue is, for example, the Jules Koundé situation, where you've got a 22-year-old who's obviously a good defender, but you already had Tomori and Gehi on your books. You know, could they have been better served in the team? Or Chalobah's exactly the same age. You know, if Koundé comes in, then what's that say about Chalobah's future? That's where sometimes you sort of think, is it really worth buying that player at potentially the cost of this other one? The other one, of course, is I'm a bit concerned about Billy Gilmour, you know, with Saul Niguez coming in. If they trigger his option and Chelsea keep the other three, what's that say about Billy Gilmour's future? But yeah, it's a very nuanced situation and there's no perfect answer, I don't think.
Before we move on from it, Simon, buy Neil Bath a pint is something that often trended on Twitter during Frank Lampard's reign and every time we see an academy graduate. I really love the detail at the start of the piece about Thomas Tuchel getting everybody, not just beer, but strong German beer to kind of ease that trepidation amongst the academy staff ahead of their first meeting with Tuchel.
Yeah, well, I mean, I thought Thomas Tuchel didn't like beer. I'm sure he gave a press conference where he sort of inferred he liked other beverages. But yeah, it just shows he doesn't tell us the truth in press conferences. But no, what a great sort of disarming way, one, to sort of have this meeting in the first place, but as sort of got wind of, you can imagine everyone sitting there going, oh, what's this guy going to be like? Is he going to be a real difficult guy? Is he going to be, are we going back to the past, pre-Lampard? And just, I think that is another indication of the man that he just sort of completely charmed everyone. And let's be honest, he doesn't like to chat over a pint. I'm sure it's a very productive meeting. But it just formed a harmony which I think is still going on. Like as I also said, you know, Neil Bath was there watching training only a few days ago ahead of the Liverpool game, and if you sort of go back to previous managers who wouldn't even bother sending an assistant to go watch a youth game. It's a completely different environment, so it's not all doom and gloom for sure. Yes, the Lampard era, which was a golden era for the academy, is over. But it's certainly still lots of room for optimism about the future.
Dom, he's a really engaging figure, isn't he, Thomas Tuchel? I'm fascinated to see how long it's going to last because it seems so harmonious between him and kind of every level of the club at the moment. And even in terms of his relationship with the media and that kind of thing, he seems to have charmed everybody and everybody likes him. But you can't help think we've been here before and we kind of know how it ends. But whether that's this season, next season or the end of his contract, it's going to be interesting to find out.
Yeah, yeah. And we have all lived through this scenario before. I mean, I'm not comparing Thomas Tuchel to Roberto Di Matteo in any way, but I seem to remember that Chelsea started the season 2012-13 absolutely on fire, and I mean, it looked as if all the momentum carried in from Munich was still with the side. Tuchel's obviously a different caliber of manager, but yeah, we just have to, you know, we'll see how it plays out. Let's enjoy it while it lasts, and we know that the Chelsea model, how they operate. If the wheels do fall off on the pitch, then only one thing ever happens. But we're not at that stage now. We're still very much enjoying what Tuchel's offering, and I mean the depth of the quality that he's got in that squad is quite frightening. He's obviously an excellent head coach. It seems to be galvanizing people on the training ground. They seem to be enjoying working for him. There haven't been any major blips, really. I mean, considering where Chelsea were when he took over, it's all gone swimmingly well so far. And I mean, I think that probably says a lot about him. In terms of the media, I mean, I do wonder whether he might be benefiting from the fact that we're all traipsing down into Cobham every week, twice a week, most weeks. So it'll be interesting to see when that changes, you know, does his attitude change? Because that must be quite weird, having a sort of a load of people from outside coming into your place of work every week, twice a week, and sort of scrutinizing you. I mean, it's slightly more distant when you're doing it on Zoom. It doesn't feel quite as real. So we'll see. I mean, I think UEFA are probably going to be pushing for journalists to be allowed in to do press conferences at stadia and training grounds possibly. So we'll see whether that puts them on collision course with the Premier League and where that goes in the late autumn. But that will change the dynamic slightly, I imagine.
Yep, going to be interesting to see that, and if and when any other academy graduates are integrated into the Chelsea first team. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod is the place to go to sign up if you aren't currently a subscriber. This is exactly where you should be. This kind of piece is what the Athletic do better than anybody else. Loads of great quotes from different people in there and some fantastic detail as well. Right, you might have noticed there was one particular international blue we didn't speak about in our roundup. We'll put that right next as we discuss Big Rom's special night in Belgium.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is played through to Lukaku. We'll get onto that. Lukaku fires Belgium in front. In the 8th minute of the game, Lukaku breaks through. Absolutely unerring finish from Romelu Lukaku.
On Sunday night, Romelu Lukaku earned his 100th Belgium cap in their 3-0 win against the Czech Republic. He marked the occasion by scoring his 67th goal for the Red Devils. That gave us the perfect excuse to call up European football expert and actual Belgian Christophe Terreur. Christophe, talk us through Lukaku's performance on Sunday. A goal, an assist, and maybe most pleasingly for Thomas Tuchel, a yellow card as well.
I think that tackle was the best thing he's done. I've never seen him tackling like that. He left a deep track into the field. You will still see it today. So when you watch the pitch, he made the tackle and you clearly saw, I'm going to get that yellow card. I don't want to travel to Russia. Belgium are playing Belarusia on Wednesday. And yeah, there were a few internationals that didn't want to travel to that game and they all took a yellow. They all have little knocks. And Lukaku was just Lukaku like he always for the national team, basically. He scored a goal and he set up a goal. The rest was just... it was like a friendly game, basically, that international game, because we scored early on. Yeah, it wasn't the most entertaining game, but Lukaku did what he had to do, and fine for Belgium. We always win those group games quite easily, and once we get in knockout stages, we're struggling.
Christophe, if an English striker scored 67 goals in 100 caps, they'd be building statues of him up and down the country and basically calling him the best thing since sliced bread. How is Romelu Lukaku considered by the Belgian public? How do people look at him? Is he a national treasure?
Well, it's not a national treasure yet. There are still people that you read that on social media and in reactions that some still think he's overrated. But to be fair, he has won most of them over the last 2-3 years. For Belgium, it's quite easily. They only judge you on what you do for the national team, I think. That not a lot of people are watching his games in England. That's always like the real football fans, they are watching those games. There's still some doubt with some people, but it doesn't help that he has played for Anderlecht, for instance, and you have quite some rival teams of Anderlecht, and so football fans who are for the rival teams, fans of the rival teams, will never be the biggest Lukaku fans and will always point at his weaker points. But I think in general, like media wise and the general public, he's finally accepted it. It's only 3 years ago against an international game in Estonia that he was basically booed. And after that game, he said, for me, it's finished. I want to retire after the Euros or after the World Cup in Qatar. But doesn't happen. And he feels accepted since a few years. So the debate is not there anymore, but there will always be people criticizing him. But that's maybe society in general nowadays.
Hey, Christoph. So what level of fitness is Romelu at? Because obviously he didn't have much of a pre-season because of the transfer, etc. Is his games with Belgium sort of sharpening him up a bit? Is he now sort of going to come back to Chelsea sort of closer to 100%? Or was he 100% already, as he sort of showed in the first couple of games for Chelsea?
I will quote him directly. He said that he'd done a lot of work in during his holidays. So he came back to Inter for pre-season, and they had to do a 1,000-meter test. And he scored incredible figures. And what he said himself in the interview he did on Tuesday with the company I'm working for, he said, I was ready to play a game to start a league from the first day I arrived. So in his head, he's ready to play every single game. He's struggling with a little issue in his thigh. That's something he said yesterday, that he will have a scan on Monday and then he will see what it is. But it's not something worrying, I think. Otherwise, you don't play two games at a high level. But he is something small that's causing him some discomfort, but I'm not too worried about him. I think he will be fit for the weekend, but he considers himself at the fittest he's ever been, mentally and physically.
Christoph, before we let you go, I was interested in the quotes from your piece with him this weekend, where he said, I only realised Chelsea was serious when they made their third offer. First, they offered 100 million euros, then 105, then 105 plus Alonso, then 110 plus Zappa Costa. From what you've said earlier about the previous reaction from supporters to him in his Belgium career, is he the sort of character who needs to feel loved and wanted, or is that not a big thing for him?
Well, that's always been the thing in his career. Like, even when he was a kid, he comes from they were, he and his brother, they were the only two blacks in a small white town, and they've always felt like a little bit different, that people were viewing differently at them, that they always had to prove themselves, basically. And when you give Lukaku a lot of love, he will give you everything back. That's what former managers have always said, even in the youth categories. He's a really nice guy, but he needs to feel that love. And he didn't have that at United, for instance, where it was immediately the yes, but, yes, but. Yes, he scored a lot of goals in the Premier League, but he's a flat-track bully. So that's something he didn't like. He doesn't like the yes, but. And at Inter, when he was welcomed by the fans at the airport when he arrived, that was his first reaction. Whoa, what's this? I've never felt this in my life. And the same goes for what Chelsea fans have done. I think in his first game, immediately singing his name, basically constantly singing his name, he felt welcome, and that's what he needs. And in that squad, he's feeling welcome. I haven't seen a lot. I've seen a lot of images of him smiling, laughing in training. He already feels accepted. It's not something. Something different for him. I think it's just like he's arrived at a club where everybody already knows him, where he knows a lot of people, and he feels already that love. And it's Tuchel did a good thing to call him a few times and to really convince him from come over here. I think the chat with Tuchel was very important, because with Conte he had a similar connection before, like make him feel that he's welcome, that he's really wanted, and he will come. And that's what Chelsea proved with that offers too. But he will have already encouraged them before, and otherwise you don't make those offers, I think.
I know this is a Lukaku loving, Christoph, but it would be wrong to not ask you about Eden Hazard. How's he looking? Is this the season where we're going to see him really deliver a Real Madrid-esque standard of performance for his club?
But he first needs to go back in to get back in the first 11, I think. That's the first thing, because he was at the bench last game. But he played two good games for Belgium, and you saw glimpses of the old Adam dribbling, playing with a smile. Yesterday, he scored his first goal for Belgium in almost 2 years. And you see that he's happy, and he doesn't feel the discomfort in his ankle anymore. And I remember talking to him even before the season, and he even promised me. I was joking. I saw an action of him in training, and I said to him, comunicado oficial incoming, you're injured in a few days. And he said, I won't get injured this season. And I say, oh, are you sure? Yes, I'm sure. So that means that he's feeling good and he's feeling confident, and that's what we need, I think. But I think he needs still a little bit more of time after, yeah, he's been struggling for 1.5 years, basically. So he still needs a little bit of time.
I think all Chelsea fans hope that he gets back to the level that he once was. Christoph, thanks so much for joining us today. We'll catch up with you again soon.
You're welcome, guys.
Christoph Terreur there. Follow him at HLN in England. Okay, next we'll reflect on an opening day defeat for Chelsea's women.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to michelobultra.com/courtside to learn more.
On Sunday, Chelsea kicked off the defence of their WSL title at Arsenal, but things didn't go the way Emma Hayes wanted. Her side slipped to a 3-2 defeat against Arsenal at the Emirates Stadium. After Vivian Miedema put Arsenal ahead, Erin Cuthbert drew the Blues level, only for Beth Mead to score twice, one of which was clearly offside, meaning Pernilla Harder's header proved little consolation. The difficult thing here, Dom, is that Chelsea only lost one game in the league all last season, and they've managed to equal that in the first match. We saw how tight the margins were. So, yeah, not an ideal way to kick off the campaign.
Yes, I guess you're right. And it will be a test, but I don't think there'll be any signs of panic from Emma Hayes and the players on the back of that. I mean, attacking-wise, they performed as well as you might have expected. I think it was 15 shots at the Emirates, which is pretty good going. I was quite interested to see the new Arsenal manager's comments post-match, that Jonas Eidevald saying that the perception is that Chelsea might be weak when teams actually have a go at them and maybe exploit their high line at the back. He sort of drew parallels with the Atletico game last season and Barcelona, obviously, in the Champions League final. And clearly, Arsenal targeted that, albeit the third goal was so brazenly offside. Maybe that's just something that Emma Hayes has to look at. I mean, I know her players probably don't want to sit deep and, you know, play a stodgy style of football defensively. And they'll only come up against elite, you know, teams that are going to be able to hurt them every so often. But maybe that is an aspect that will have a pondering for the fixture list ahead. But I wanted to ask you, Matt, about VAR. Why are we not seeing? Is it purely financial that we're not seeing VAR in the Women's Super League? I mean, given that's an obvious example of when it would have been useful.
Yeah, I would say that is the most likely reason. And unfortunately, the officiating is something which comes under a lot of scrutiny in the WSL. And for all the investment in it, it doesn't seem like it's been made into that aspect of the game as yet. But maybe the fact that it will be more visible now will mean that that does happen fairly swiftly. It's worth pointing out a couple of caveats in that Arsenal have played Champions League qualifiers already, so they're a lot fitter than Chelsea are. And Chelsea had players who went much further in the Olympics than Arsenal did, the likes of Sam Kerr and Magda Eriksson, who played in the final, as did Jonna Andersson. But also, I think Chelsea are really starting to miss Maren Mjelder at right back at the moment. You saw that in the first goal. Vivian Miedema really caught Jess Carter out of position and left her for dead, essentially. So that's a big area of concern, which does make it slightly odd that they let Hannah Blundell go to Manchester United in the summer and didn't strengthen in that area. But early days, but as we saw last season, Simon, the games between the title rivals can be so vital. You know, it's going to be Chelsea, Arsenal and Manchester City. And now Chelsea have already lost one of those head to head. So it puts pressure on when they play the return fixture later in the season, but also on the games with the likes of City and maybe to a lesser extent Man United as well.
Yeah, but that's when sort of you sort of have to back the sort of history, the fact that this team, this manager knows how to pull a very long winning run together. I don't think it's something to get too worried about. It's just sometimes this happens on the opening day of the season, even to the best of teams. But if anything, it will probably sort of galvanise them, and the cliche wake up call, you know, all those kind of messages will be banded around the dressing room. I fully expect them to sort of bounce back very, very quickly and go on a winning run and sort of show why they're going to be very tough to beat once again in the league. But it's probably good for women's football, funnily enough, though, that this result has happened. You know, it shows, because Chelsea have been so dominant in recent years. People will think, oh, perhaps it won't just be Man City as it was last season, that Arsenal can actually pose a genuine threat. The other thing to bear in mind is, of course, Lauren James wasn't involved. She's the high-profile signing of the summer, and she's working on her fitness. So give her a few weeks, and she'll really boost that attack if it needs boosting, to be honest. But so Chelsea can get stronger, basically, once she's involved as well. Chelsea will be a real force to be reckoned with, as we fully expected anyway.
Yeah, she didn't kick a ball for Chelsea in pre-season. We'll see if she's involved in the Blues' next game. That is at home to Everton this coming Sunday. That's the 12th. That's going to be a good occasion too, back at King's Meadow, with what one would assume will be pretty much a full house. Chelsea sold out their allocation of season tickets for the women's team this term. That will just about wrap things up for this episode. Before we go, though, let's see what the chaps have been working on for Athletic subscribers to enjoy. Simon, we've heard all about your magnificent Academy piece. What else have you got in the pipeline?
Well, you can still read my piece about Callum Hudson-Odoi, of course, who it's almost connected, the subject, but he's the Academy player Chelsea didn't let go, which is probably to his detriment, because you do sort of worry about the amount of minutes he's going to get this season. But in terms of this week, we've got a few things sort of coming up in terms of, there's a wider read on, there's a bit of a debate that's going on across all the Athletic writers of who's got the best goalkeeper, best defence, best midfield, best attack. And me and Dom are both sort of chipping in with Chelsea. We've decided not to include, this might be controversial in itself, we've decided not to enter Mendy into the best goalkeeper category, maybe just because we thought we can't have Chelsea in every single one. we've got to give someone else a chance. If I was to sort of say why I wouldn't have Mendy in there, and I do really like Mendy, by the way, before I get bombarded with abuse, I would just say the ball at his feet, he's getting worse, if anything. I would have thought he'd be getting better, but he looks incredibly nervous whenever the ball's passed back to him. And ever since the season started, he just looks like, oh no, you've passed it back to me. Like, he looks like he's having a panic attack. So that would be why he would be in my candidacy. But yeah, me and Dom are working on a joint project. I don't know whether you want to pitch it, Dom, or are we going to keep it
under
wraps?
I'm just enjoying hearing you debating
myself
with yourself, which is quite remarkable, really. We don't need a team of writers, we just need Simon thinking about things.
This happens a lot in my house. I just shut the door and just have a debate with myself.
Dom, if I'd have said to you this time last week, drink water and ramen in Reading, you might think I was offering you out for a pretty disappointing dinner date, but it's actually something else you're going to be looking at.
I think that sounds like my destination for Saturday afternoon, to go and see how those players are doing, early days in their stint at Reading, season long stint. And I think Danny Drinkwater is in the final year of this contract now, surely, isn't he? I'm amazed then he hasn't been offered new terms before he gets sent off on that loan deal, because quite frankly that breaks all their policies. Clearly the last time we'll be seeing Danny Drinkwater in his association with Chelsea, so that'll be quite interesting. I'll chart that Saturday. There's various bits and bobs going online over the course of the week, and an interview weirdly, with the director of football at the Canadian Premier League, which I think goes live in the next 24 hours at some point, just as the son of Kevin Gage. Do you remember Kevin Gage? He used to play at Wimbledon and Sheffield United,
Villa?
Aston Villa. Villa, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Ollie Gage is currently running Canadian football.
Wow. Well, that sounds like a textbook athletic piece. Theathletic.com/ChelseaPod is the place to go to sign up. And now you can get a third offer subscription too. We'll be back on Thursday when we'll look ahead to the visit of Aston Villa to Stamford Bridge. Until then, from Simon, from Dom, from producer Lucy, and from me, it's bye for now.
The Athletic.